Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Kaiju Power Hour. I'm your host, Weedle, joined alongside Lemur and Fernie. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. Well, I'm doing well.
Thank you, Weedle, for correcting him last week.
Yeah, well, you were gone. I know. I had to make sure.
Just got done playing Super Rive for like 40 hours over the past 4 days. It's a blast.
Crazy.
Looking forward to next month already.
Yes.
Can't come sooner.
Yeah. Yes. I'm recovering from Final Fantasy, not Super Rive, because it was the worst week ever for me. But I was able to catch one single game of the lore prologue tournament, and it was the one where Weddle won. So,
look at that. We're also joined alongside a major guest here, Relic. How you doing, Relic?
Major guest. He says that's very flattering. I'm doing good. I'm sort of in my. Sort of in my like 45-year-old mother pampering phase right now because of all of the stress that I undertook over the last, two months or so.
Oh my gosh.
So it's just a nice relaxing time. Gonna, you know, shoot the conversations with you guys. Thanks for having me. Gonna be a lot of fun.
No, it's gonna be tons of fun. We are recording this on August 7th, 2024 at 3 p.m. EST. I like to have that down for the history books, you know. Relic, Let's get to know a little bit about you. You know, what do you do in the online space? What is Relic? You know what I mean?
Who are you?
It's a question I ask myself every day. So people will probably primarily know me as a caster. I made my beginnings in the sim racing scene, if you can believe. So stuff like R Factor 2, Gran Turismo. All that sort of jazz. The original plan was I was going to be the next Formula One commentator. And then I realized that wasn't going to happen. So instead I pivoted into esports. Rocket League is probably what most people know me for. Since then I pivoted into a little bit of sprinkling of Apex Legends, bit of Fall Guys, most recently Pokemon Unite. And then of course a year ago, I started casting a little game called Project Loki. And here we are a little bit later. But I'm also a talent director and co-founder of the Battle Hub tournament organization and production house, who have become, in very quick time, the most consistent and highest quality TO in the Pokemon Unite scene.
Nice. All right. That's some fun stuff right there. You've touched it all, dude. You're like Formula One into esports. Like you're like you got like the casting for everything and talent. Oh my gosh, you're going crazy, Relic. You're going crazy with it.
I mean, listen, variety is the spice of life, is it not? And so I want to try loads of different things out.
Keep the life perspective widened. You know, that's what I've been working on. Yes. That's what I've been working on.
Do you find it's like easier to cast games that you enjoy, or is there like specific games that you like casting better versus others? Or like,
I only cast games that I enjoy. Okay. I think that should be sort of like baseline, unless you are getting paid a lot of money, in which case you will enjoy whatever you do. I feel like one of the key components of any caster should be you should play the game. You should understand and have opinions about the game from your own experience playing it. The more, the merrier. And look, even if you don't have that top level experience, you can at least understand why people who are good at it slap so hard. So yeah, I love everything equally, except Super Vive, which is absolutely my favorite child at the moment.
Same
here. You know, I started finding myself like it was like the day after, right? I went to work in the morning and I came home. I sat in my chair and I'm like, I was like booting up. I think I booted up Minecraft for 5 minutes and I was just like, yeah, I'm now getting into that point where I don't want to play anything else besides Super Vive. I did before I was fine. Like I could just log on to any other game and play it. But now I'm like, everything else feels mundane to me. So. I'm getting into that state. I was going to ask you, how did Relic come to be? You know, where do we get the name Relic? Where did this all come from? Where did it spark?
I mean, it's actually a bit of a long story, and even then, it's not a very clear one, because I wanted a unique moniker when I was... Because when it comes to like racing commentary, everybody goes by, you know, the actual real life name. But I very quickly found my name being James Kirk. And not only that, but having a middle name starting with a T, like I'm literally a walking sci-fi reference. And so it was actually quite good for me to try and find a quote unquote stage name in esports. Mm-hmm. And so I just sort of thought, well, what do I like? Just, you know, think of some stuff off the top of my head. I learned French. I like sci-fi. What's the sci-fi name? iRobot. I also majored in history, something history related, like Relic or so. And so iReleak came about, and that's what I was known for the longest time. And then nobody knew how to pronounce it properly. And so a couple years ago, I thought, well, let's just shorten it. The relic part works quite well. And here we are.
Neat.
Oh, that's a good start. Nice.
I like that. Well, so it's funny because I can kind of relate to that because, like, my name, my, like, name is, like, it has Weedle. But, like, no one ever can say that correct the first time. So, like, I was just was like, ah, Weedle's easy. Just Weedle is so easy. You just tell people Weedle, boom, shakalaka. You hit them with it. What games do you enjoy outside Supervive, Relic? Like, what else would – if let's just say before Supervive, you know, or, like, whenever, what would you play outside of the Supervive game?
Well, like I kind of gave the game away in of itself. Yeah. I still play a lot of Pokemon Unite. It's still a game which I have a lot of time for, a lot of love for, as much as the developers certainly make it trying at times. I am a shameless Honkai Star Rail enjoyer. I'm sorry. Look, turn-based games, they got me right here. But I'm also a big lover of single-player RPGs. Give me anything BioWare or Cyberpunk or... yeah, anything along those lines. I am a sucker for a good story, and especially one where you as the player can change the course of the story, rich characters, rich writing. So anything along those lines takes up way too much of my time. Also, Football Manager and F1 Manager, help me please.
This can
a big variety.
That's nice. A wide variety. So would you like stuff like Detroit Become Human then? And like,
oh, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, yeah. That's like the most dynamic storyline that you could be hating right there. Like, that's like a huge dynamic.
Baldur's Gate, Dragon Age, Mass Effect, as I say, Cyberpunk, anything. And even stuff as far back as Telltale's Walking Dead series as well. Man, love all of those things.
Those were so much fun. I love the old Telltale games. Like, were so, used to love those so much. You know, we got to know a little bit about you, Relic, but how was everybody, you know, overall, how was everybody's weekend? How was it? You know, how did we enjoy it as a whole? You know, I'll even let Relic start. You know what? We've been going through. I'll let Relic start over here.
How many different ways can I describe my weekend? It was stressful. It was exhausting. It was terrifying. It was delightful. It was rewarding. It was sensational. It was beyond, I think, anything that any of us could have expected, really. So looking back on it, like in the rearview mirrors, so, so happy with how it all went. In the moment, I don't know how I kept any semblance of sanity because there were so many things that could have gone wrong. I'm just glad that everybody was able to play their part, but you know, players and crew or whatever, and come together to make a really awesome, awesome show.
Yeah, because you were doing like five different things, right? Like you were trying to cast, and I'm sure you were like TOing in the background and like running all of the like administrative side of things. So
that was actually more lore. Like lore did. Right. I mean, shout out to them. They were handling the administrative side of things, and so was really, really like actually by that point, once we were mid show, like I'm broadcast director, and so I'm making sure that everyone's in the right place at the right time. But yeah, spot on. I'm also hosting, and then I've got to switch the mindset to go to casting for a few games. And on top of that, I've got to make sure that, you know, ads are running as well on the stream and how, you know, how's the feedback going. And earlier on with the show matches as well, I was also producing. Never going to do that again, by the way. So yeah, lots of different skills tested and tried for me over this weekend.
Yeah, nice, nice. Yeah, that sounds like I just imagined like how many people like had to actually do like 30 different things to actually get this going, and I'm like, especially being all online, I'm used to running like in-person stuff and it's already hectic enough. I'm sure online is like even worse. So I was thinking about that when I was tuned in. I'm like, okay, they got a whole like production team. They got all this going. It's like, it's crazy. It was
awesome. I didn't expect there to be like an analyst desk and like a host and like all this kind of stuff. I was like, whoa, what's going on?
I mean, we were really fortunate because as much as I could reach out to people and Battle Hub, having a production server in place with like boosted audio and already people there who are aware about moderating and TOing and like having that resource available from the get-go was already a huge boost. But then so many people reached out saying, yo, we'd love to get involved. You know, how can we get involved? And, you know, you've still got to pick and choose. I pride myself in putting together high quality shows. And man, everybody brought their S game. It was so cool. And I'm so glad that people thoroughly enjoyed it. Hopefully there's going to be more of that on the way.
Oh, heck yeah. No. How was your weekend, Lemur?
Oh, it was all right.
It was all right. Just all right.
It was all right. You know, we ended up dropping 2 EU show matches, but we'll get to that a bit later. So can't be.
I think we should be good. No issues.
I think the cameras might be on. The names might be on different people now.
Oh, holy shit! I'm Lemur.
Oh no, it's just Lemur and Funny.
Oh okay.
Yeah. Yo, more ad revenue, low. Let's go. Pre-roll.
Okay, there we go. Okay. Okay. We are back.
We're back.
Kaiju Power Hour. Let's go.
Kaiju Power Hour. I am recording again. We are good. All right. Well, we're back. We left off. The weekend was exciting. It was a good time. It was fun. We had the lore tourney. We had so much. We had cosmetic skins. So much we're going to get to dive into. But guys, what was one of your favorite moments, starting with Fernie, from the playtest?
Okay, to be clear. For those that apparently haven't been listening yet, if you haven't, I have seen 15 minutes of this playtest and I've read one section of the patch notes and it's just the void buffs. So I would like to say, though, I actually do have a favorite moment, which is really funny. It was like during that Kobayashi game, right, which is really crazy. I was specifically watching Lemur because like the POV was like on Lemur at the time. And I saw, like, I don't remember who it was, but someone was teetering really close to like Tiny Heart, and I just saw Lemur like weaving in and out waiting for the air blast, and then he got it like as soon as the person overstepped, and I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That was my favorite moment. But
that was a banger game.
That was a banger game right there.
But yeah, it was that, and shout out to The Last Door, my homies winning. That was my actual favorite moment. I was DMing Abador like on the side. I'm like, hey, please keep me updated. Like, I need you to win. Like, this would be so awesome. Blah blah blah. But yeah. And I'm glad it went well. Like, I was rooting from the sidelines. I was really hoping the event went well because being a TO, it's like you can see how much work is put into stuff and how risky, and like it's the first one for a game in alpha. Like, what happens if the game explodes like during the playtest or like, you know, anything on production side. So yeah. I'm really glad that it seemed like everything went off with pretty much, you know, no problems whatsoever. So that was my other favorite moment. But yeah, what about you, Lemur?
I guess my favorite moment of the playtest, well, besides the lore tournament, which we'll get more into later, there was a game where, you know, It's like a terrible poverty run. My team's just dying constantly in ranked. You know, we're really trying to get rank one. We get this I'm the last one alive, as normal, and I'm trying to get my team back up. I'm on the back of that new ship in Scavenger Bay that just shoots you back with all the fans, and I'm like trying to dodge all the fans. Inside of a box on there, I pick up the teleport soul. I like jump up on top of the ship, teleport from out of bounds over to the most wanted, go over into the middle of the abyss, and he's just jumping around and on a jellyfish, and I spike him, get my team alive, and we win the game. And that was my favorite moment. It was just like a sequence of events that just was like chaotic, crazy.
You gotta link me that clip later after.
Yeah, I'm gonna make the video.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy. That probably went so good. Super exciting.
Yeah.
Relic.
What about you, Relic? Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, like I agree with Lima. Like, we'll get into the lore tourney because, man, the prologue had some unreal moments. But like on a more personal level, it was lovely to be able to play with a couple of people who had. It was almost like the opposite problem to Fernie, where they had no time until this playtest to play. And so Eternal Jay, who was with us on the desk, like this was his first moment to not just watch Supervive but actually play for himself. And the dude picked up Shrike and literally went godlike in three games. Like the guy just started popping heads left, right, and center. And I'm like hearing the joy in his voice as he's able to do such cool things. Like, oh, that is Supervive wrapped up in a nutshell for me, is getting it and just loving every moment that you have with it.
Heck, that's awesome. Yeah. Heck yeah. I had an absolute lore tourney, you know, second favorite moment. I'm gonna put it out there. We were playing, it was like day three. I was like hanging out with some buddies, so I wasn't playing with the normal squad I was like queuing up with, right? So I got home and I was like just trying to find a squad. So like, you know, Dolphy and Major Pleasure, you know, they adopted me. They brought me in. So I'm playing with Dolphy, Major, and Ezib. And we were just messing around. We were goofing, having a good time. And Major was just playing hide in the tree. Okay, so they're like right to the right of heart. There's these little trees next to a lamppost, and there's two of them. So Major decided to put the third tree there just to hide, and I decided to hide in between all the trees. Right, Major starts walking closer to me, and I fly halfway across the map because my character did not know where to go. And I am literally almost up in I was moving up to Frag Isles. I somehow caught myself in Mage Bog before I got there, but I would have made it to Frag Isles. Like, my character's momentum had to have been like 4,000 movement speed. Like, I had to have been moving so fast. But like, I was just like, Major's just like, Waitle, where'd you go? And I said, I'm on my way to Frag Isle right now. Oh, it was such a funny moment. I was like having an absolute blast, but I'll have to get the clip of that one. That one's really good. Like the displacement, it was like some like displacement bug or something. I don't know. It's really cool. Really cool. It was an absolutely fun time. This patch was a fun time, guys. I had a blast playing this patch. I don't know about you guys. Cosmetics? Yeah.
It's like the first time that we really gotten skins in the game. They were in the game in the past, but like, like one skin or like two. But yeah, this was cool to see all the cosmetics and changes. I know some people were a little nervous about the VFX and sound effects changing per character in a battle royale. I personally want skins to be in the game and you not have to disable them. But I do think right now some of the VFX and stuff are a little bit problematic. And we did see them get disabled for the lore tournament. So I'm wondering what you guys kind of think about like the whole situation that people are talking about with the VFX and sound effects in a battle royale.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to try and argue over, because on the one hand, from a visual perspective, having all the different skins is not just interesting for visual value, but it's also great for Theorycraft because it's literally a free advertisement for, yo, check out these cool skins that are in the game, because every single one of them is a favorite for somebody. But obviously we don't want to compromise competitive integrity on any level. And if the VFX or, you know, if any sort of facet of the skin has a bug or interferes with fights or has a different hitbox, even, I know that's an extreme, but it, you know, that's something that does need to be sorted. But hey, we're in alpha, so like this is the time to sort it out. Great feedback. And okay, we had to turn off skins for this particular tournament, but I am hopeful that feedback has been onboarded now, and hopefully we can see them turn on for the future.
Yeah, I'm not in the loop. What skins were problematic?
Basically any of the Lux ones, Angelic Forces, Luna. I think they were the main offenders.
Yeah, the Dark Order Shrike skin. I personally think that like the ult was way harder to notice when she was using it, and then like the grenade she threw was like, it's like a really big explosion. Like I don't know, it was like very distracting to see. Gotcha. Compared to just the base version.
Yeah.
I think it was like the Aluna root. was pretty pretty light, pretty transparent. It was not easy for some people to see, right? Like, obviously, you can point out, like, again, it's like the straight thing. Like, you know, you can point out certain things, but again, like, it's more about, like, well, the base skin is so easy to see. Like, when a skin is harder to see, then that skin just becomes, you know, meta, right? Like, a meta skin, like, you can abuse with that.
Pale
and, like,
skin.
Yeah. And there were gliders as well. Like, you know, like, the gliders, the glitch wave. I can't remember all the gliders there were. There was the glitch wave. That's the one I can remember. I think it's the one
I know previously the moth one is, like, less noticeable. I don't know if that's still in the game, though. I didn't play this test. So, but I know people thought that one was quieter before, and it was, like, you know, less noticeable. So I definitely saw that coming with, like, gliders and skins and stuff, but I didn't realize it was that bad this test.
Well,
go on.
No, please.
all right. Also, the teal-colored Kingpin skin, if you threw his hook over the abyss is, like, a teal color, and it was, like, pretty hard to see.
Oh, no.
Which is, like, a pretty big deal for that skin.
Yeah.
I mean, look, as I'm sure all of you will be all too aware, the players, especially for this game, very passionate people.
Yeah.
Very passionate people. You're peeling back the curtain a little bit. Like, there was nigh on full revolt in terms of, like, format, in terms of point system, in terms of, like, making sure that everything was right. And so at the end of the day, that player feedback is so essential to be able to put on a good show. And I think, certainly speaking with a lot of the players, like, a lot of people enjoyed what they saw in terms of different concepts around the room. People are liking what people are cooking up in terms of looking forward towards the future. No spoilers, we'll talk about that later, of course. But, like, keep it nice and simple now. Highlight those issues. And again, don't want to bang on about it. It's alpha. And Theorycraft have shown so much ability to listen and implement stuff that the players want that will ultimately benefit everybody in the game. So I don't think there's too much to worry about long term. I think we really can have a balance of great cosmetics, you know, different ways to express yourself outside of skill expression, and then we'll have lovely pretty pictures to look at in the future.
Exactly.
I agree with that sentiment. I think a long time ago, I don't know if it was Bellissimo or Bubo, but they said that skins will generally be pay to lose rather than pay to win.
Yes.
Like, yeah. So that was a direct quote of what they said. So I think they'll get there, and we're testing the game. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
But did you guys have, like, a favorite skin that you guys used or saw?
Oh, Dark Order Strike, you kidding me?
Yeah, I was
every Strike skin so far has been.
I saw
this beautiful
animation for that, and I was like, oh my god, I want this skin. Like, it was really cool.
The intro sequence for that skin is also very crazy.
Yeah, that one went crazy, but I think personally, like, I would objectively looking at all the skins, like, knockout Bishop, man. Like, it just was so cool. Like, boxing gloves, like, and boom. Oh, yeah, that's just so sick, man. Like, that was my favorite one of all time for all the skins. But there was actually a really cool thing. So I think Oath had, like, a Captain America looking, like, skin.
Yeah.
And then there was Black Widow Shiv. So I kept telling Adam, I go, we got to be the Avengers right now, Adam. You have to go Captain America Oath so I can play Black Widow Shiv.
I really appreciate about the Oath skin as well is the Lux version has exact same color scheme.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
I really, really like that. I like that choice to be able to say you can make the character look different, but if you really like the color scheme of a character, which some people put a lot of emphasis on, like, hey, I love these color combinations, I think having that as an option for all characters in the future would be really just as a nice extra thing, just, you know, keeps things nice and simple.
Yep. Well, we also had some character changes. We had some hunter changes, some new hunters rolling around into the scene, some crazy ones. Zeph shot up the ladder, I think, pretty well. Oath came back into the mix. It's been about a year since we've seen the Oath in the meta. So
the return of August Oath.
Major Oath in the meta. Yeah, it was feeling like it. So I don't know. What hunters did you guys think were crazy? You know, which ones did we like this time around? What changes did we feel?
Void sucked. From my experience. He still needs like 10 buffs. I don't know.
I actually did play a little bit of Void, and I think he still kind of sucks. But the problem is like his only saving grace was kind of the Void Celeste combo, and now that Oath is really good, you're never landing the Void Celeste combo versus an Oath. So, but I think that Oath and Zeph are really good. I personally like when Oath is really good in the game. I know there was a bug with like his ulti moving too fast or something, but I like when Oath is good. Maybe not as good as he was, but I like when he's like a tanky frontliner that, like, you know, is this wall that teams have to think about whether they go in or go out or breaking the shield and whatnot. I feel like it adds more things to the team fights.
Yeah. I think he adds like a little extra layer of depth that you kind of normally don't have to consider because there's no real other character like him. So seeing him like, you know, more played is like obviously really cool.
I think calls to say that he's giga broken, a little bit over the top. I think what Oath does really well is he synergizes with a lot of different compositions. And I think that if you take a look at the prologue, Oath and Zeph was the play. You literally have that little sprinkle of heal, but the sustain comes through the ability to disengage on a canter. And so you don't need the Iluna, you don't need, you know, anything else that's going to be tanking. You can afford to run something a little more aggressive on the front line as well. So maybe a nerf to Oath, but I also think that we should be looking at other characters first, like preempting the inevitable Zeph pop off. I know Paz was like, he's the first one like ringing like the Yeller's doorbell or something. He's like, oh my God, you know, like this is a serious problem. And yeah, it kind of is. But I also think maybe looking at a Luna, you know, giving people a reason to go a Luna over an Oath and a Zeph. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the play rather than cutting Oath again. I don't think that's the right one.
Bringing them back then, yeah. I say one of the major, another thing too is like, Oath, you know, was it, I think, Jewel now being unstoppable instead of invincible. Like, yeah. Oath actually being able to block something like a Jewel dashing through a team and, like bringing Jewel down a notch. I mean, Jewel, I don't know. I didn't see too much of it, right? I played one arena game of Jewel, and I did the sick combo, guys. Like, I did the go up in the sky, land on the person with 4 stacks, get everyone 4 stacks. I was like, ching, ching, ching. I was like doing like a star formation. Like I was like going crazy. I was having a good time. But I do think like with some of the, with Jewel being brought down and like some of the characters being brought down that like Oath kind of struggles with, Oath didn't really need a lot to get brought up. Like he's always been there, right? Just other hunters got brought down a little, maybe too much. And maybe you need to bring it, like you said, Relic, bring other hunters up just a tiny bit more to like make that like mid-level.
Yeah, historically, I mean, Jewel gets like countered by Oath pretty hard, so it was like extremely hard patch with her getting the changes and then having to play versus Oath a bunch because she can't dash through a shield. But Brawl, actually, the nerf on Brawl, I think he's like a little bit weaker. I think a lot of players just stopped playing him regardless whether he was still good or not. I think Brawl actually deals with Oath, like a balanced version of Oath, like pretty well. You can stun him through the shield and, you know, do a lot of damage with your R&B whenever you're in range. But Brawl really wasn't on the menu for people this playtest. So it's kind of hard to know what characters would do better until these comps, especially if you're in a BR game where you have to worry about, you know, 10 teams rather than if you're just playing arena and there's like a pick ban or something. There would be a lot more you could see there with like counter picks.
You know, I think a tweak onto Void might also be a pretty good. The thing which I've always thought about Void is his ultimate range is nothing. Like you have to get so close, contextually speaking, to another team to even have any hope of catching two.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, 3. You're not likely to catch 4 all in one go. So being able to start an engagement with Void there's a possibility that it gets giga broken if you add too much range onto it, because then it's like, hey, I could just grab all 4 of you and then we can go dive. But I think a little buff in that area would also be a great, like, hey, don't all center around this Oath lad. You know, maybe let's look at different compositions and have contingency plans.
Right.
Hey, I'm down for that. I do kind of wish like it was a skill shot instead of just like, oh, you have to do melee range positioning on a character that feels like he shouldn't be in melee range.
Exactly.
It's a little weird. Yeah, for sure. So I definitely know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I don't think there was too many other hunter changes that really like came through. Like
Shiv
nerfs didn't really feel too like they were like the bug definitely you could feel. I think the damage did feel lower and it felt like it was almost right now. Like now it felt like I was like doing what I was supposed to be doing, like damage wise in most of my games. But there were still some games I was going crazy. And like Myth, I played I think a game of Myth. The LMB feels better, but again, like I'm not like that's not an LMB for me. Like that's not my style. Like I love the abilities though. Holy, you know, Myth still feels great. Still like playing Myth. So, was there any hunters that did any other major changes? Kingpin
feeling strong as ever.
Yes, Kingpin's good. Celeste, you can now cancel Celeste ult.
Yeah, she could do that before, but it was like they misread the patch notes or something.
Oh, fair.
They missed it though, but yeah.
All right, well, yeah.
She's still good. I don't think she's overtuned by that much anymore, especially with Oath in the meta.
Yeah, definitely. Now you have like more of this like wall one-to-one trade type of thing. So, and there was also a lot more map strategy. You know, day one got crazier. Day one went insane with what we had forges.
Night one.
No, not even just night one. Armor splitting, forges, and night one bosses. Yeah. So like, it's just like that whole one. You know, day one, day and night one. Just the number one went crazy this test. You know, but no, night one bosses. We had a bunch of new exotic items. I thought emergency boots weren't going to be as good as they were, and then they were good. Like, because Mage Bog, you know what I mean? Like, Mage Bog made me realize that those things, I didn't think water was going to work with them. I didn't think it was going to be water. I thought it was like, oh, it's going to be Chaos Steps, or it's going to be like, you know, north of the map where the frozen lava is or whatever. So I was like, they were pretty good. Like, a lot of the items were pretty good.
Yeah, I like seeing all the new items. The one thing I wasn't sure about is like, so the bosses spawn night one. One spawns in Vaingrove and one spawns in like the between Mana Coils and Prisma Falls. Mm-hmm. And they don't spawn if the circle, like if they're out of the circle, but they spawn every game in that exact spot every single time.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like it's cool that there's like a spot you will know, like you can always path to always contest an objective. But it did feel very like, okay, if we're landing on the south side of the map, we're always going probably for the Prisma one at night one, and we're going to fight five teams there. And then if you're on the north side, you're going to go for the Vaingrove one and fight teams there. You know, sometimes, you know, you swap it up and go to the other one, but it feels just very, like, consistent that you know, you'd always just want to go there for night one.
Right. I agree. I think one thing was, like, if they kind of like, you know, if it gave you 30, I think it should still give you a notice, right? It shouldn't just spawn because then it's like, oh, it just spawned in someone's face. They just take it, right? But I think like a 30-second notice, maybe it spawns somewhere in the circle, you know, like it could spawn anywhere within the upcoming circle. So like night one bosses were great. And the level 6 too. So if you got the last tag on it, that one was even crazier. Yeah. So like you just like, you know, you're like, oh, we have to go for the last hit. Like, the other team's just been hitting it. It's at 5%. Like, if we don't get the last hit, we dip. Like, somebody already get on the back foot. Like, start packing up the base camp. Get us far away from here as possible. So, night one bosses, they made the game change. They made the game change for sure.
Yeah, I like everything. I like everything. I'm totally on board with you, Lima, and Weddle. I think that a little bit more RNG. Those night one bosses would do the game the world of good. I mean, obviously you need enough space to be able to do it, and Lord forbid we see some sort of night one boss in Kobayashi's or something. Or then you've got a time limit on there as well as but I also, I mean, listen, the forges I think make a welcome return. I think they are decently balanced. I think they are useful in the right condition, which is, I think, what any sort of support mechanism on the map should be like. Love armor splitting. Yeah, I mean, listen, the amount of... I think it's more problematic in ranked than it is competitive, but if there's one thing that we can learn from Bomber in the last door, just out macroing everybody, is we don't want teams to already have the avalanche going in their favor. immediately because they've taken one vault. So to split the armor across the map, you know, to make it a little bit more even, to add a few more objectives as well to fight over and to prioritize. I think just in terms of how the game plays out early on, big thumbs up from me. Really enjoyed those changes.
I think I was a little bit sad that it said in the patch notes that it would either be split 1-1-1-1 in the orange vaults, or 2-2, or 4-1, like how it was in the past. But I never saw a single time where it was like four all in one area. I think that like I missed, even though I kind of wanted them to be split up a little bit, I did miss like the one chance where it's like, you know, I never had a drop where there was like five teams fighting ever really. And I kind of missed that from when it was all in one vault.
I did get the 4-1 at one point, but the chest never dropped an armor. Oh. So I think it was bugged, and the 4-1, I don't know if like they knew it was, or like if they found out it was, and then the guy turned off, or it was like it's really low percent chance. But I think the 4-1 should definitely be an off, you know, because it's like that. It's crazy because like it's like that one game that's just gonna go insane. You know what I mean? Like that's where every like the one chance, you know, where you get everyone dropping in the same spot, you know, like you pull off like crazy play, win the armor, snowball your lead. Like it's okay to happen every once in a while, but I do agree. I really love the new armor splitting, like the 1-1-1-1-1, the 2-2. Like it's really nice to be able to have squads determine on the map how to split up and move. And it was nice too when Kaiju Vault wouldn't be anywhere close to it. You know what I mean? Like, or even if it was, you had to decide, am I going to do Kaiju Vault or am I going to do armor? You know what I mean? Like, and then the Kaiju Vault could end up being Kaiju, like, I think it was Heart. I would say Heart's the lesser of the three because I is really good and Scale is really good.
Yeah.
And then you could RNG Kaiju Heart and you're just like, well, at least we got Kaiju Heart, but at the same time, like, armors might have been better than Kaiju Heart, you know what I mean? So you're still also putting the coin flip up, so I don't know. I really like the new map strategy that they have determined in this.
I definitely like they're making the effort to kind of, you know, give more agency and presence and things for you to do, like, throughout, you know, the days and the nights and stuff, because there's definitely been, for the past couple months, like, a little bit of a lull in the mid-game, you know, when you're kind of like, okay, you hit your level cap, you're waiting for souls to spawn, you know, you're just kind of walking around, so it's nice to see they're, you know, making the effort, for sure.
No, absolutely, definitely. When we also had, if no one has read it, we had the, Nidhogg matchmaking post about the lobbies.
Did you guys get a chance to read the Twitter post made by King Nidhogg?
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
No?
I'll pull it up. Feel free.
It'll be a long read. I'll summarize it for everyone.
It's a long read.
Really?
Yeah.
Great feedback, though. Like, yes, honestly, I want to say hands 100%. Down, great feedback. Long read, but worth the read. It's really good.
So, essentially, after it was like probably Friday night, the ranked queues had like concluded around there. King Nidhogg made a post about how the lobbies and everything in general is like kind of very sweaty and very competitive, and no one's like trying to have fun in the game, whether you think fun is like, you know, winning or winning in unique ways, like teleporting the heart across the map and like killing someone with it, or, you know, knocking people on the train and whatnot. But generally, like, the way lobbies were being run is they were a lot more strict on matchmaking this time. For instance, generally every game I played was pretty high quality. It's like the highest matchmaking I've probably ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But it was at the cost of, like, if we have really high quality games, then everyone needs to be tryharding. And if, you know, one team's not tryharding, then they're going to get killed. So it just made the game feel a lot different for people, and a lot of people didn't like it. But I don't know. It was a great feedback, and I wanted to bring it here because I think it's an interesting discussion to have. Did you guys feel like the lobbies were any different on your guys' side? Or?
Well, just to, I'm not good enough to hang up there with you guys. But what I can tell you is that if the lobbies were anything like the North American show matches and prologue matches, yikes. I can understand where the frustration comes from. And so, as harsh as it might sound, opening, like widening the band a little bit so that you have one or two teams who are very clearly going to be the worst in the lobby, in terms of the quality of the game, might actually be a good thing, because those two teams going down early, as they should if they are in that position, could be the catalyst to a team feeling more confident, going more punchy mid-game, snowball. You know, just, you know, it offers something a little bit different rather than what we saw most of the time in the competitive side of things, where it's like nobody wants to engage. Everybody's farming until minute 45 or whatever it is. And then when the circle is so small that those teams can't coexist anymore, then everyone's like, oh, well, you know, all for nothing. All for nothing. I spent 30 minutes getting 50 million exotic items, and now I've just... Yeah, that could be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's even an argument for the two teams that actually get to join the higher lobbies. I always believe, like, if I want to get better as a player, and, like, I'm close... Let's say, like, the band widens, right? Let's say, like, I'm close to that, like, MMR to be able to join them, right? I think you can also preach that they get maybe a learning experience, or they get a feel like the high quality lobbies of, like, that they don't ever get to experience, because, like, they're at a lower, they play at, like, normally every game is, like, at a lower level, but this game is a high level, so this is, like, your game to, like, really test. And, like, that can also, like, incentivize, like, playing really well too. Like, that can incentivize, like, trying everything out that you possibly can to get that extreme bonus ranked points so that you can maybe shoot up and get into those lobbies, and you get a little taste of it. You want that taste back, you know? You want to have that prime feel.
I think the main issue with, like, what he was saying in the post is, like, every single lobby he was in, those lobbies where it was, like, he was expected, probably based on the numbers, expected to lose. Right, so sure. He never had that moment of, like, I might be able to win this game. Right. Maybe they did at some points, but, like, it was always just always in the top lobby, no matter what, because the matchmaking was so strict at the higher end. Which, in turn, it made it so, like, we weren't out here, like, everyone out here wasn't stomping new players left and right. Like, I didn't see a single new player. I think I pretty much recognized everyone's names I was playing with almost the entire test.
Same.
So it's kind of like a give and take, and it's good and it's bad. It's kind of just depends.
Yeah, it could also come to the factor of, like,
maybe.
And I think it was in the post, if I'm trying to remember, about, like, maybe more players could solve the issue. More people within the bands of the queue, more distribution in the ranked. But again, if there's not, this is a problem. And this is a problem that has to get solved before it becomes a complete issue that everyone's like, I just don't want to play now, because this was always a problem. It never got fixed. So, really good feedback. Really liked what Nidhogg had to say about it. I don't know. Did you read it, Fernie?
Yeah, I skimmed it just now. I definitely, like, I've always kind of had a problem with the game being this competitive this early. And for clarity, like, I competed in a kid's party game for, like, 5 years of Smash Ultimate. So, like, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying that making people be really sweaty this early is a risky choice, probably, and you're gonna have this friction with these people complaining about it, and they're super valid and warranted in doing so, because the player base is really small and you only get, like, a couple hours a month to play. And when you you know, have to deal with something like that, where you're, you know, the game is telling you to lose every single game you play, it's not fun, because if the game was out, you know, that many people, with way more people playing it than, like, the limited alpha player base, you're not gonna run into that as much. There was, I don't know if people saw, but I think there were some like graphs and results from a Call of Duty, like, internal study they did, where they turned off skill-based matchmaking and they didn't tell anybody, and retention dropped, like, a lot when they had it off.
Yeah.
And it rose right back up.
Yep.
So it's, like, the same thing, but the problem is it's going to be harder for those people that, you know, get hurt by it in a limited playtest where, you know, you have limited time, you have limited people. It's, like, it's going to sour your experience of the game. And it's, like, it makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't blame them at all. Like, yeah. I mean, I've definitely felt that some playtests too. Right. So, and I've definitely felt the other way, like, where it was way too loose and I was just stomping people and I wasn't getting in those good lobbies. Like, it's not, but yeah, regarding, like, the competitive stuff though, I don't know. I've always been like a little kind of upset with how early they put like ranked and leaderboards in, not because like I didn't want to compete, and obviously I did, but I feel like it's not, it does make people not, you know, theory craft as much, or like kind of have fun, or do like I want to teleport the heart across the map and kill somebody randomly, like, but that's just not logical, like, to do in a game, right? Like, why would you waste your group teleport and use it once, and like when you could be using it like every single team fight or something, right? So it's like, that's the thing with like competitive games though. Like, you're gonna have, even with a sandbox, people are going to optimize and min max and, you know, do what's less fun or less creative if it's better. So that's just kind of, that's kind of what happens. But I do wish there was a way during the playtest where like people were almost encouraged not to be sweaty. Like, I'm glad lore and prologue is happening, because I really want to see the competitive scene and like do all the tournament stuff, but I also want to see like casual people just stream the game and do like the most stupid things ever, like all Shrike teams, all Oath teams. Like, that stuff is cool, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my like 2 cents on it.
I mean, look, they have to dip their toes into the water at some point. Is it a little bit too early here? Maybe. I think that's a totally, you know, that's an opinion that will be tested as long as time itself, but they're here now. Yeah. I wouldn't be upset if they turned ranked off until open beta. I wouldn't be upset if they persisted and made sure they got ranked right with it on to some capacity in every test. I think there will always be people who will complain. There will always be people who will complain if the complainers get their way. And that is the impossible situation Theocraft finds themselves in. But their developers, their experience, they know all this already.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And it kind of, another thing too that can kind of like play into that is like, we are in these like small windows, right, of playtesting. We're not in long windows of playtesting. So like, we don't get open time to just queue up, do whatever, whenever. And like, maybe I don't want to play ranked during this time. Maybe I want to play like unranked and then play some ranked, you know, so then I can do all of what I want to do, right? So ask the questions like, was the 8-day the right choice, or was the 3-day a better choice? You know, like, it's a back and forth question on it. So I don't know. How did you guys feel about the difference in the 3-day versus the 8-day test?
I liked the 2-hour break in the middle of the 8-day, but it probably like lost them some players. But it was kind of rough going just immediately from EU to NA with no break, and just, obviously I'm in the minority of playing it the entire time, so they shouldn't, you know, focus on that. But it was nice to have some kind of break in the middle for people that did want to play the whole time.
I think this might be one of the only times where I'd say that I feel that Theocraft could have done something different here. I think the fact that they went as far as to post on social media, hey, this is why we do 3-day tests as opposed to 8 days all the time, was a really interesting move, which at least tells me that whenever the next one is, if it's every 3 to 4 weeks, then I'd say we're looking at late August, early September, we're probably going to see another 3-day.
Yeah.
But I would like to see it Friday to Sunday rather than Thursday to Saturday. And it's not just because, there was a huge discourse in the main SuperVive server that the way that the Discord time bot worked, they're like, wait, wasn't it supposed to run until Sunday? And it's like, 1 a.m. on Sunday or midnight Sunday or something. And so it's sort of like it didn't clock for a lot of people, in which case, like, read. But also, I do kind of get it. Like,
that's been happening for so long. You have no idea.
But like, at the same time, I can understand it sometimes a lot of people working normal everyday jobs, Sunday might literally be the only day that they get off. Like, not everybody's going to get their Friday evening off or their Saturday off or something. And especially for a game which has been well documented by this point, is only available every so often. And so therefore people are like, stop, start. Oh, there'll be another test to chance, to play it next month or whatnot. I've got Marvel Rivals until then. I've got, I don't know, My Little Pony until, like, whatever. Like, there's other options that people can play. And so, you know, you're asking people the impossible choice of prioritizing their time. So you can still keep that 3-day cycle. You can still give yourself a lot of time to work on it and develop it, but set it over the weekend. And Lima, I'm actually with you. I think the fact that we had to have the NA show matches during EU play hours,
yeah,
really wasn't. It was a lower key playtest in all. Like numbers were down, at least from what I was seeing in terms of viewership, in terms of people just playing in general. But listen, if you know, if you're gonna work with people like myself on the show matches, like admittedly I signed off on that as well, but a break would be nice, even if it's just an hour between the two servers. Mm-hmm. Even that half hour break, you know, for the real tryhards wanting to go all throughout the entire like that half hour is the difference between having dinner or not playing the show match, or you know, like having to grind through all of it. So I totally understand where you're coming from.
No, definitely. Yeah. And
I really wish you guys did get that, because that's the one thing, like when I was doing raiding, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I get like 30 minutes, you know, for lunch and dinner. And like, if servers are up the whole time, you're playing, like there's no, and I, you know, I would do the same thing if I was playing that week. So I know it's probably bad for retention, but you know, they're probably getting to the point anyway, I think that was mentioned, where like, they're going to be doing longer ones anyway. So we'll see. We'll see.
Hopefully.
No, definitely.
Yeah, hopefully.
And I was going to say, like, it's crazy, like, going from, and I mention this all the time, but, like, it's crazy going from, like, ours, like, way back in the day, like, where it was, like, we got three games, and that was the playtest for the month.
That
like,
was
we
crazy.
We got three games, and then then we moved up to an hour, then we moved up to 2 hours, then we moved up to 3 hours, and then four, five, now six, right? But, like, the evolution of it's, like, these 3 days, like, I feel like you're also right, Relic. Like, the 3 days being Friday, Saturday, Sunday would have always made a lot more sense to me than the Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But, you know, they've always locked in as, like, a demographic for them is their Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So maybe there's numbers. Yeah. Maybe there's something behind there that is more.
I think part of it is because they only have to come in an extra day to work instead of two.
Yeah, very
true.
To
be honest. So I think they're getting to the point, though, where they can't really do that too Firma. Much anymore, unfortunately.
No,
like,
no,
it sucks, but yeah, like, because they have to have people like literally like monitoring the servers, running the servers, doing all this stuff, which, you know, they did in like the YouTube short and all that stuff. So it makes sense this far, but obviously like open beta is coming this year, so or not open, closed, I can't remember, there's a beta, it's some kind
open beta,
the beta,
open. It's
right.
Open,
it's
yeah,
they
okay.
said open, they said open.
So, maybe that means servers open the whole time. Maybe it doesn't.
Surely, right? Or at the very least, it's going to be a long enough window every day where most regions that can participate will be able to.
You would
assume it's 24/7 at that point.
Yeah.
Up 24 hours for.
I think an open beta where it's not open the whole time, like the dates, 24, you know, 5, 24/7, however long the beta is like really weird, to be honest, and probably turns a lot of people off from like playing the game a lot, because then you have to plan around it rather than, oh cool, I have this day, I'm going to be able to like play for 3 hours randomly on this day,
right?
But yeah,
no. And one thing I was just going to mention last, I was going to say, I was watching the Tom Kick stream during the last 8 day. Bellissimo, I think Bellissimo misspoke, but it was funny when he said, yep, later this year, the game will be released. And then Zayfog goes in chat and goes, no, that you can't be saying that. You can't be saying that. That's not what he said. Bellissimo. It's open beta. And I'm like,
you know,
Bellissimo.
That's really interesting as well, because actually, I'd almost imagine that we're going to be in quite a long beta phase for this game. Like, at least where the game is right now, they're in a very careful position where this is a great game for alpha. I think add a couple more things and it's going to be in a great place for beta. Is this a version 1.0 game? Not for me. And I don't see that changing, even if they go overtime, until at the very least 3, 4, maybe 6 months into 2025. Mm-hmm. I think sort of midway to the second half of 2025, that's when I could first conceive version 1.0. Then again, I know nothing about video game development. And so I'm just speaking out my butt on that one.
There's also, no, that's a really good point. And there's also my primary concern, I guess, is I think they have the core of the game, like they're chilling. That's not a problem. And I think they have plans for like when the game comes out, how they're going to do it live service. But to be honest, there's a lot of tech that they need to cover. Like there's a lot of bugs. There's Void has 30 bugs every single playtest, like 30 new ones. And you have, you know, they have to figure out the skin stuff with the VFX and everything. They have to fit. I'm sure they have to figure out like live servers that are always on 24/7, right? Because they're an independent studio, so they don't really have, like, you know, it's not like they're Riot where, oh yeah, we can just connect it to Riot Direct or like hook up with our servers that we already have. So I'd be insanely surprised if the game came out this year. And kind of set, like, up, like, worried, to be honest, like a little worried, extremely. So I'm sure that was just referring to the beta.
We'll I think it was too. I just thought it was funny and I had to mention it because
throw Bellissimo underneath the bus.
It was like, so,
we could grill him next time we
have
him
so,
on.
It was so funny because, like, it was just a memory in my head. But Relic, are you ready to talk? Are you ready to spill the beans?
I'm always ready to talk. And I mean, spill the beans. Listen, depends what the beans are.
Okay.
Depends
okay.
what the beans are.
We have some announcements. Is that what's happening?
So we got some war tourney questions. All right.
Sure.
All right. Let's just start with the basic one. You know, it's going to be a three-parter, but what sparked the lore tourney? Like, what initiated the move here? And then, like, how long has it been in the work? All right.
Sure. So the second question is way easier to answer. It's been in the works for about 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
As for the how did it come about, this game good. Therefore, people want to play good game at a reasonably competitive level. And especially as there are a lot of people involved in this scene who are pretty interested in esports and in, you know, getting into Super Vive competitive early. There was this whole conglomerate of people who were like, I'm going to make a tourney. And then it's like, well, we're all going to clash with each other, aren't we? And so up comes this, like, almost like this focus group, this big shark tank of a bunch of different creators and TOs and all the like. And out of that comes a group of people that would later become known as Law and myself. So the idea was always that we had a pretty crystallized idea as to what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. That idea got thrown out the window when the players said that they didn't like it. And so eventually we ended up with two different regions, which honestly, I think was the right call in the end. You know, at the end of the day, it's also still a game in alpha. And so cross-regional, let's maybe save it for LAN. Let's maybe save it for another day. But Law, bless them. You know, they had their website set up. They would handle all of the sign-up stuff and organizational bits and bobs. You know, I could say my piece, you know, here and there, you know, have a say in how the tournament came together, the format, structure, all that sort of jazz. But my main purview would be production, putting on a good show, making sure that this tournament looked as good as it did, making sure that Law got all the credit that they did. We were very, very fortunate that there was a bunch of awesomely talented people who wanted to work with us, both behind the scenes and on camera. And so, yeah, over the last 2 to 3 months, that was cooking away. Intel came through the door at literally the last hour. I kid you not, that whole pricing agreement came together in 2 weeks. Insane. Insane, but also a great testament to how people want to get involved with this game and the fact that, you know, companies as large as Intel are already looking at it and thinking, you know, this has got some legs. This has got something here.
All right. Did you actually, you mentioned the formatting and like your thought process into that. Did you personally think the current point format is good, or do you believe there might need to be some adjustments within it?
Sorry to everyone who disagrees. I think the point system overall actually landed pretty well. I really do. I think as much as anybody who doesn't have the context can look at the overall leaderboards and see the last door absolutely destroying everyone else. Yeah, and even in EU, you know, Bomber's consistency was really strong, but you look at everyone else behind and that's really the data which you need to analyze. And it was close. You know, if you don't have those super dominant teams, the points are going to be spread around pretty evenly. And so I know I was talking to Lima about this. Was it yesterday or the day before? And I can maybe see a world where, so for reference, the first place points was 15 for placement with a one point per kill, in that being the last person to knock someone down to a wisp, but then you get the kill point upon death box. I think that was all fine. We can maybe see a world where it increases to 20. I feel like that wouldn't be too unreasonable. Just gives it a little bit more catch up ability for the midway teams. But yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised by how well the point system worked.
So was I think it was EU game 2, there was a team that actually was getting close behind Bomba, and I was like, oh my gosh, it was like, you know. And then they had some crazy games, so they took it by storm. And credit to all teams. I play, you know, credit to all teams, round of applause. All teams did really well, you know, it was first tournament. So you can't be too down on yourselves. But I really did like, I actually liked the point format and thought it was really done really well. Now, I'm going to leave this next one to Lemur, because I think this was Lemur's, one of Lemur's questions.
Yeah, but before we get to that, I'm curious about, I know we talked about it a little bit, Relic, but match point. I think it's a very interesting topic for a tournament format, for a BR.
Yeah.
Essentially, teams, once they hit a threshold, say it's like 75 points, they have to win the next game in order to actually win the tournament. So, usually, you know, it's left off for like very important matches. Because there is some uncompetitiveness to it, you know. If a team is on match point, why don't you just focus them and just, you know, kill them, get them out of the lobby? Like, all 9 teams would want to kill that team on match point. But eventually, you know, it gets it, so, you know, there's maybe 4 or 5 teams on match point. You can't just kill all 4 or 5 teams. There's like a lot of kind of meta of the tournament once it changes to match point. I watch a lot of Apex, so I find it really, very interesting, but it definitely is more like a viewership, like a viewer perspective rather than a player perspective. Generally, the player probably would always want to, you know, just have the kills count, because that's the most kills and placement count, because that is just the most consistent way. What do you guys think about match point?
I also watch a lot of Apex. I like it a lot. I was there live at the Split 2 London LAN live. Like, you know, that stuff is so hype.
Yeah.
But I think it's so hype because it's saved for the big occasions. There's an idea, spoiler alert, there's an idea that I'm cooking around with right now where it would be very similar, where it'd be a lot of points accumulation, maybe a couple of phases to the thing, and then as that grand finale, match point scenario. And I think that that's the sort of balance that makes a tournament really, really exciting. If you just have match point back to back to back to back to, I mean, that's going to get boring real quick. And as you rightly say, that also changes how people play the game. I think in a negative way. I think that the context of the tournament and figuring out who's in the right place, if your comp is working, if your drop zone is working, right, that feeds into how you play a match point scenario, because ultimately, you don't even have to worry about winning necessarily straight out the gate. The winning only matters once you hit match point. So it's how do you get to that position first? And that's not necessarily going to be by going guns blazing, getting one win in the first game, and then, you know, like flunking out in 10th every other game thereafter. So I understand the viewers want it. I understand the players want it as well. And I would say that it is on the way. If I have anything to say about it, just don't expect it to be in excess. I think that we have to be reasonable and integrate it in an exciting and fruitful and in a way that will ultimately reward people watching and playing in it.
I like that.
Fair enough, yeah. I've never played in it, so I don't know how it'll feel. Probably will feel bad, but I think...
Be the first team on match point is probably got to be
the last door is not worst. Leaving their spawn.
Honestly, though, the first team on, I was the other day, I saw a clip on Twitter, Apex, 13 teams were on match point.
Yes,
teams. I forget what team brought it to 13.
Don't tell me. I want to watch it later.
Okay, I won't. I just saw that. I saw that clip. It was crazy. It was crazy.
Yeah.
No.
But yeah, onto what we were going to talk about before. I watched all of EU as I was getting prepped to play in NA, and then I've watched 5 of the NA games so far and played in, obviously. What do you think about the difference between EU and NA? Because I feel like when I was watching the cast from the NA perspective, they're all like, EU is so different. They're all aggressive, and NA is like they're all just passive. They're not doing anything. Does NA suck?
Yes.
What do you? No. what do you think between EU and NA? Like, is there like a difference in playstyle? Relic, you would probably know the most from watching and all.
I'm gonna get a lot of hate for this. EU doesn't gap NA. I think Bomba gaps NA. I think that Bomber played that series beautifully, and it's even more impressive given how much more they were pressured in comparison to you guys on the last door. Like, I mean, there was literally game five, me and Lawler were laughing because Pumpers were like, if they weren't hounding Bomber, then Bomber were hounding them. They were like continually drawn to each other because they recognized that, hey, these are the biggest threats in the lobby. We kind of got to deal with it. But then you're also looking over your back because you don't want to get third party. So it was naturally more exciting to watch. Yeah. I think that you guys, I mean, look, you out macroed everybody in North America. Shout out to Wadle and Go Hogs for disrupting the norm. It was nice to at least get one on them. But you know, honestly, the thing which I think enthused me about the future of the esports, and especially on the North American side, where yeah, the end rings were really fun, but up until then it's like, you know, I snooze. That wasn't that bad. It was never that bad. But look, I think Passion Fruit and the way that they improved the way that they improved throughout the series to the point where they went from literally bottom five fodder to back-to-back second places, and there was a clear graph lineup on how they adapted, how they, you know, made the situations better for themselves, choosing the right people to engage with. I want to give a shout out to Yon Kishi as well in EU, who I think really improved throughout the series as well. People got to learn, and I think that's what people have got to remember here, is although there were two blowout victories in both regions, there were just two teams who brought the macro way better than anybody else on the day. And there's already a lot of people here on Discord, whatever, saying, man, with hindsight, I see how I should have played that better. And that's just part of the learning experience. So EU on top for now, but NA will get there, I am sure.
I think if we were in EU on Ping, we would win, so... But
saying that off the back of what was it, a sixth and an eighth place in the EU show matches?
On good ping. I do respect the Pumpers, the Chipsa squad, for actually trying to take down the Bomba squad from winning. Yeah. Whereas I don't think anyone really tried to do that to us in NA. Maybe some teams did, but like they were like landing on top of them, going to find them, UAVing, running at them, like that kind of thing. And we definitely had that happen in the ranked lobbies from them as well. So it's like they were actually trying to like take down the number one team, which, I mean, at some point in the NA tournament, it was probably like it was too far for, you know, people should just try to play for second because it's like statistically impossible to get first. And they should just target the second place team, but. I don't think it's as far reached EU and NA. I don't think it's like EU is better in any way personally.
It's a mindset change away from being a lot more exciting North America. I think I'll leave it at that. Like if people learn to just forget the names for a little, and I know some people have been saying name tags off, I don't think it's gonna, in fact, if anything, if I'm a player, I want that information.
I do too. I want names
I off. Want that information. I want to see, hey, that's number one in the lobby and they're only level two, let's get them. Yeah, but that feels like the way forward is just have belief in yourself that you're actually good enough that you are them.
Yeah.
I personally think having names off would just help us even more, so I think people should want names on, honestly, but yeah.
Of course, I'd want names on, you know, this time around. Next time around, I'm learning my lessons, dude. I'm learning from the lessons. I've been watching, or I've been evolving and adapting. I'm going from Weedle to Kakuna. I'm in Kakuna right now, okay? We are learning. Beedrill's coming out next turn.
You need to post that on Twitter.
Don't you mean Beedrill?
Beedrill? Oh, Beedrill.
Because
Beedrill.
Yeah. I like that. Was there anything that surprised you about the tournament? Like, just anything. It could be literally with production, could be with, because one thing did surprise me, I'm gonna mention this, I just want to think this is cool, replays. I thought that was sick that you guys had replays up there. That was actually really cool. I did not see that coming. That was the coolest thing I think I saw from production. So
it's gonna be difficult to find him on Twitter because we reckon he's shadow banned for whatever reason. he's not done anything to deserve it. But Sunderlad, so Sunderlad, I believe it's the Sunderlad on Twitter. Chris, absolutely goated producer. I mean, genuinely, I had a meeting with him the night before the show, and he lowered my heart rate with how less stressed I was at the end of that meeting. He's like, yo, we got this and this and this and this. And yo, I got this idea. And yeah, no worries. Just throw me the playlist. And
that's crazy.
He's incredible at his job. You know, to the extent of in his, you know, regular time. I mean, he was literally working a show at the O2 Arena in London not a week ago, the location of where the League of Legends World Championships are going to be held in November. So
crazy.
We are very blessed to have him. There are more producers where he came from, for sure. But for any future shows that we are involved in, if Chris is on board, you can expect more of the same.
Oh, heck yeah. That was awesome. Oh, that was a good time. Lamer?
Yeah. What surprised me? I thought people would start to focus us. That's what I thought.
Same.
If someone actually went through and watched all like 12 hours of like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I keep telling my team, I'm like, you know, in the show match, like if we are in the tourney, if we die, like we're not gonna get the res off. People are gonna run after us and chase us to the ends of the earth. I keep telling them that, and like it didn't really happen. So that's what I was most surprised about. That's
what took you by a storm. Yeah, it's crazy. I know I brought the production thing. Did anything else surprise you though, Relic? Was anything off the top of your head, like,
or was the amount of subs that people gifted out?
Oh, nice.
I sort of say it tongue in cheek there, but genuinely the amount of support and positivity in chat. I know already from the Discord streams of old with the Project Loki show matches that people are hyped to watch the game, but the turnout was great, especially given the low. Again, I saw someone say in chat that there was like just like 1,000 less in terms of overall viewership over the playtest, but really to see the lower numbers get replaced by a really consistent 400 to 600 throughout the entire thing. What was it? The max viewers was 884. I want to say, which, you know, for my little place is pretty nifty. And on top of that, I really think just nothing went wrong on the broadcast side of things, with the sole exception of Beomolf's camera. For whatever reason, that was delayed by 30 seconds. and so what he was saying wasn't syncing up with his camera. Yeah. And that was the one chink in the armor. So the fact that the show went as well as it did from a technical perspective, I think, surprised me, because you always prepare for the worst in those situations.
Wow. Oh, definitely. So then would you say there wouldn't be like, it wouldn't be much more of improving on the war and overall, like maybe not like in terms of like things that could be improved on for the future?
Oh,
right?
There are always things that can be improved upon. Okay. All of us casters could have more knowledge, you know, in terms of, you know, organizing players into lobbies. That could have been a lot swifter. Although admittedly that does rely on the players, the one variable that you can't control, on top of, you know, at the admins making sure that the information is clear. And look, I would have loved even more stuff for the desk and for the replays. I would have loved live statistics. I would have loved to have had the live kill leaderboard, because that's something that we're gonna, I mean, I don't know whether Law have already figured it out, but we at the day on the day only had average kills and not total kills, and so that $20 MVP, we weren't able to update anyone on that because we didn't have it. I'd love to do hunter selection percentage. You know, is everybody really picking Oath, or is it a trick of the eye? Just small little details like that. But those things come with those things come with budget, though. You know, those things come with more back end work, and I'm sure for bigger projects in the future, you probably will see that.
All right. Any future tourney ideas, though? Like beyond, because I know you're talking about the match point, right? You've already talked about match point. Do you have this was something Lemur was mentioning, like arena duos, like
I didn't mention that. Really?
Yes. Oh, Relic mentioned it. Okay, yeah, he's put it down. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. There are ideas cooking, and I am willing to share them with you and Fernie, not on the Kaiju Power Hour stream.
Okay.
Stuff is coming. Just in general, I think, do expect to see some TOs leaning into duos and arenas, though, just to try and find a niche, just to test it for the sake of testing it. I think there's a lot of value to be gotten out of those two game modes, because duos is completely different. 20 teams as well, if you're limiting the lobby size, means that more teams technically can compete, and Arena is pure micro hell. So we can do a double elimination bracket for that, for example. Yeah, there's lots of ideas. Lots of ideas.
Alrighty then. I was going to say, maybe we could tap in some Fernie viewer questions, because we are going to be maybe looking at a Kaiju Power and a hour and a half podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's hard to say. Let's dip in some viewer questions and let's see what we get, because I do want to hit into some.
Fernie,
you pick them, all right? You hit them first.
Yeah. So I guess since we were just talking about lore and we were talking about surprises, Kirby was actually asking like if there was a team individually that surprised anyone, which I know we kind of touched on it a little bit, right? But maybe not Bomba or The Last Door. Any other teams that you kind of noticed that you got surprised by?
Oh.
I know, yeah. Lemur, you mentioned Pizza Squad, right?
I would choose the Pussy Bad Boys in EU.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that they got second, I believe. And, I mean, if I had thought before the tournament, I thought Pumpers was going to get second. And they took it away.
Nice.
Obviously they're all really good players and I played against them a lot, but I just thought Pumpers would take the second. But
One for me would be I really thought, like, I watched all EU and I was gonna say the one Lemur said, so I'm gonna pick something different so I can be happy about it. But I was gonna say unironically for a lot of like what BAP is a lot of one tricks, you know what I mean? Like besides maybe a few, and they were still playing Brawl. So like I was like, you know, it can lie on us at the end of the day, but they did really well. You know, it's also kind of partially Paz is new to their squad, right? So like there's something there, and like I don't know. I thought they did really well. I watched some of their stuff back, like, and they did better than what I would have, what I projected they were gonna do in my own personal thought process. So I'll definitely give it to BAP and Passion Fruit too, I guess. But BAP, yeah,
Passion Fruit were great back end of the series. They were phenomenal to watch. Was really fun seeing them improve. I will say, I think in terms of surprise, I'm surprised that Good Comms let a top three slip. I think that was almost as disastrous a game six, as they could have had. Not as bad as the Locomotives. Shout out to them for being the fastest elimination in any game across either region. I think it was 36 seconds
they
clocked it as, which was insane.
Yeah.
Good Comms fell almost as quickly, though. I think they got cut down in half, and they were quite fortunate because where they dropped it was pretty close to Kobayashi's, and so at least one of them was able to secure themselves and hunker down there for a little bit. But to lose they were second going into game six and they finished up fourth. Oh, that's heartbreaking. And I think Q Deathmatch as well was quite surprising to see them dropping out very early in a lot of the games, which ultimately led to a bottom half finish. I'm sure we'll see them bounce back stronger next time around, but that's just how the cookie crumbles in some of these tournaments. Sometimes it's your day and sometimes it really is not.
Yep. 100%.
Let them queue up for Deathmatch.
Oh yeah.
Deathmatch. Hey, Deathmatch tourney, they no one's catching them, right? They are taking the dubski there. Dubski.
Nice. Yeah, and then I got some more. Stevenator was asking, after watching only one tournament for Supervive, who does everyone think is the most and least hype characters? So I think that means like spectator POV probably.
Most hype is Gunner because we hardly saw him. I think we saw him once, and I love that big boy. Hey. I love him. He is so different to every other character in the game because he is so anti-sh movement. It's hilarious. But I think anytime we see him later on down the line, we're going to see some really interesting compositions built around him, as long as he's balanced correctly, and I guess as long as he survives the culling process. I don't know what the crowd wants to do with him. In terms of least hype, I'm not going to lie, got a bit bored seeing Celeste so many times over the show matches. She's just such an easy... There's some times where it's exciting, like, yo, what a great wall into a train, but people are kind of aware of what Celeste brings to the table now, because, I mean, goodness, she's been in the game for how long at this point in her current form? So, but it's not to say that Celeste can't be exciting. Of course, you ask the question and I provide the answer.
All right. And I will say, there was a funny story about the Gunner one. I was watching Bomba and watching their comms directly because I was like seeing how they were doing. Last game, Trenzy's like sitting here like, guys, we're up by so much. Please let me play Gunner. Just let me pull it out. Let me pull it out, guys. And I'm typing in chat like,
please,
guys,
he should have done it.
Just let him pull out Gunner, guys. Like, please, like let him pull out Gunner. But they wanted a win for their final one. So like, I respect it. I respect it. Go on a win is a good thing. It probably felt great for you guys to go on a win on your last game too, Lemur. So you know,
we had some TC devs say that they'd give subs if we played Gunner.
Oh, no way!
Are you costing me money as well? No.
Or play other characters. I don't know if they said Gunner.
But as a spectator, I would say one of the most hyped things to like see is flashy plays. I think like this goes for any game. So seeing maybe like, I feel like we didn't really see it a lot, or at least I didn't see a lot in spectating like Jewel, right? But I think like something like Myth could be kind of flashy. I will always say Shiv can be kind of flashy. But I would want to see something like Jewel, maybe better, like flashy. You know, some flashy character would be like hype for me. But I in the end, I guess this time around, it was seeing Oath again was probably the most hype for me, and the least hype for me was definitely going to be, Relic hits it. Nail on the head. It's Celeste, man. Just like, you know, how many times do I got to see this? Like, you know, I've played for so long. I've seen this. How many times do I got to see Celeste? So, that's it for me.
That's fair. Yeah. And we'll do one more quick one. So, Crouch was asking what everyone's opinion on Kobayashi and like Circle is from an esports perspective. So, thinking about the one game the Hogs won, the one game the Last Door lost, probably. What are people's thoughts on it? I know Relic and I were talking a little bit beforehand about Kobayashi.
It's almost like we came pre-prepared for this question.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Even though it wasn't asked. I mean, to be fair, it's a fair question to ask because it was a little bit absurd. That's funny one time, but what if it does happen again? I think that the devs have to look at that, and if they really want to commit to bullet trains dragging the Circle into and around the train tracks, of which obviously Kobayashi does fit that bill, they've got to find a way to basically introduce Knight into endgame, or at least a mechanic where you can potentially pay off the guards and have them disappear. I think that would be a very, very cool and unique way to solve the situation by just, if you've got enough money to pay them off, a moment where they're just sort of lulled into a false sense of security and then just go bang. And then everyone's like, oh, yeah. Like, I think that would have been really, really interesting. Because otherwise, you end up with 10 minutes where you're waiting for the Circle to get a move on. And as I say, funny one time, but the joke gets old pretty quickly, I think.
I agree with that.
I was having fun with Fire Blast, shooting people into the train. And
I saw there. You were.
But my rest of my team was not having fun.
Yeah. I will say, like, Kobayashi's is like a game you always have to play for, right? Like, with power. So when you know, if you have any thought process is going to be there, like, you're going to try to play for powers for that. And I think it's one of those things where it's fun to come around. But, like, if it starts getting consistent, then it's like, how fun is it really to be consistent where you're just like trying to play for these powers or play for something like that's maybe not like, I don't know, everyone realizes what they need to do at that point. So
yeah, once people don't walk near the heart in the train and I can't air blast them into it, I'm not gonna be having any more fun.
Yeah,
I saw some kingpins like dash grabbing people like
across
the map.
Snow on 4GG was having a blast with that.
No, that was insane.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I think we're pretty much at time, so I don't want to keep Relic too long.
Yeah.
Kaiju Power Hours another
time. No, Kaiju 2 hours. Let's go.
Kaiju two hours. Though I do, we want to ask Relic, what can we expect next? If you know anything, dabble it, share it a little bit. What's going to be in the future, Relic?
Okay, how do I say stuff without blowing people's ideas wide out into the open and also trying to keep a little bit of mystery and suspense?
Okay.
I'd expect fun modes. I'd expect differing game modes. And I would expect people, even though you might not see it until later on down the line, maybe even months, expect people to go big on the ideas to deliver an experience which completely eclipses $1,000 the prologue. I think that at some point down the line, we're going to see some sort of league play format. That's sort of like where I'm seeing as like the big picture. So yeah, keep an eye out on socials. Maybe not as much, if anything, for September, but October and onwards, watch out.
Oh, man. All right. That's suspenseful. Yeah. That's great.
Did I sell it well?
You sold it really well. That's good. Okay. That's there good. I love that. I love that. Any final shout-outs you got before we end this one out, Relic?
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, honestly, watching the Kaiju Power Hour for it's been going on for over a year, technically, I guess, hasn't it? So, yeah, like it's
close.
You guys do so much great work in the community. It's wonderful to see you being able to talk about it to everyone now. I would love to come back at some point in the future, however soon or far off that might be. Let's talk more Super Vive and let's keep on building this game up to what it deserves to be.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, the next KPH, next Kaiju Power will be, who knows? Usually we do it before the next test.
We don't.
We never know. It could just randomly spark. There could randomly be one, right? You know what I mean? Like, we always thank our guests for coming on and what we consider short notice. So thank you, Relic. It is always short notice. We love the comments. We love the support feedback. It helps out a ton and everything. And we always love our live viewers. We try to do this live when we can. It's a lot more fun that way. Then we can get viewer questions. So if you want to come check out the live while we're doing this, you can always catch it on when we go live. We'll announce on Twitter, in the Discords, that kind of stuff. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for joining us, Relic. I hope you always have a great rest of your day. I'm Wadle. Peace out.
Later, you guys.
Ciao. Bye, everyone.
All right. What?